today, we're in the third Sunday of Advent, and we've been in this season of anticipation, just trying to imagine what it's like, what it was like for them to wait for the birth of Jesus. And so this morning, I want to look at this idea of expectations, right, and how that plays a role in the season of Advent. So before I jump in, why don't you take a moment and just discuss this question with a neighbor. What was something that didn't meet expectations, right? And then how did you feel about it? So it could be an event, maybe a book or a movie, a restaurant, you know, experiences, whatever, okay? So think of something, what was something that didn't meet your expectations, and then how did that make you feel, right? I'll give you a moment to do that. All right. So it sounds like there was a lot that you guys were disappointed with. Sounds like. You need more time? You still need more time to get this off your chest? All right. Anybody willing to throw out something? What's something that didn't meet your expectations, and how did you feel about it? What's that? The Game of Thrones finale, yes. We're still on that, yeah. That's still a lot of weight to that, yeah. Anyone else? Martha. Wow. We just went there. All right. That's fine. I can see that. Anyone else? A relationship? Yep, not meeting expectations. What was that? Oh, tattoo. Well, there are tattoo removal services, so. You know, for me, this is a little bit embarrassing, but we were with my family, my sister's family in LA over Thanksgiving, and on the flight back to Austin, it was a, you know, sold-out flight, so when we booked it, there weren't many seats left, and so we were all split up. Clementine was sitting with me, Rachel and Gabby were sitting in the row behind us, and then Zachary was on his own in the row in front of us, and midway through the flight, I catch a quick glimpse of the lady who's sitting next to me, and she looks really familiar. And so I'm trying not to be creepy and stare, but just based on the side profile alone, 95% sure it's Amy Adams, right? It was in LA, you know, Hollywood, makes sense. And so I'm starting to, you know, expect this is going to be my meet a celebrity moment. And, you know, I noticed that, you know, she's taking care of a young girl, probably her daughter, across the aisle, and then her husband is behind her. And I can't get online, so I can't confirm this. But finally we land. And so I get on my phone, and I'm like, secretly Googling, you know, Amy Adams family. I know it's a little embarrassing. Amy Adams family. And a picture pops up, and she does have a daughter. Right? And looks a lot like the girl who's across the aisle. So I'm starting to freak out. I text Rachel. I say, I'm pretty sure sitting next to Amy Adams right now. Big eyes emoji. And then she starts talking to me. She's like, oh, are you visiting Austin? I'm like, no, we live here. You know, we're just visiting family in LA. And so this is home for us. How about you? And she says, oh, we're just coming back from vacation in Hawaii. And I'm thinking, oh, that sounds like something Amy Adams would do. And then she continues and says, now we're headed back home to Round Rock. Amy Adams does not live in Round Rock. So my dreams were shattered. Very disappointed that my expectations were not fulfilled. And I turn around to look at Rachel behind me, and she's just giving me the biggest eye roll. But for Advent, right, one of the main themes that we see when it comes to the birth of Jesus is that it doesn't meet any expectations at all. Like where he was born, the family he was born into, right, the delivery room that he was, you know, birthed in. Like all these things, there was nothing about this that met expectations of what people were looking for and hoping for. And in some ways, Advent is meant to be a space where we can engage the disappointments of some of our expectations that haven't been met. This is how Eugene Peterson reflected on expectations. He said, Jesus does not always meet our expectations, does not always give what we ask for or what we think we need, When he doesn't, we feel let down, deflated, disappointed, or we surf to another channel on the TV, or in our case today, we binge watch an entire show, or we try out another church that will hopefully give us what we ask for. And unfortunately, his description really captures our reality and our response when our expectations don't line up with reality. And so the question I want us to consider this morning is, you know, how are we invited to respond when our expectations of God don't match reality? And the text we'll be looking at, it continues the story of John the Baptist and the expectations that he had of Jesus. And if you remember last Sunday, we had Jeff Chu with us. It was a beautiful gift for our community just to hear his voice and his story. And so if you haven't, I would encourage you to listen to the podcast. But in the text he preached from, we see the story of when Jesus was baptized by John. And that marks, this is a significant moment that marks the beginning of his career and what many thought would be the start of this revolution that would overthrow the oppressive Roman Empire. That's what they were expecting and hoping for. And so in the text for this morning, we jump forward in time in the story, and then we start in verse 2. And so when John heard in prison what the Messiah was doing, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, "Are you the one who is to come, or are we to wait for another?" And so here we find that John's locked up as a political prisoner. Eventually he's going to be executed. And on top of that, he starts hearing stories about what Jesus is doing, and it doesn't really line up with his expectations. You know, they were all expecting this powerful leader to essentially rescue them, right? To overthrow and to establish peace in a revolutionary way. And yet, John is still in prison, right? It doesn't really convince him, and it really adds to his doubt that Jesus is going to be that person. And so John's starting to question and wonder whether he had put his expectations on the wrong person or not. And so for us during this season of Advent, you know, we're invited to practice curiosity with our expectations, especially when we're disappointed when they're not met. You know, I'm guessing many of us have experienced disappointments just throughout our journey of faith. You know, we've carried many different kinds of expectations of God. Maybe we've had an expectation that God is transactional, right? So if I do this spiritual practice, then somehow God should hear and answer my prayers. Maybe we have an expectation that if God is love, that God won't allow us to experience any suffering or pain. Or maybe we have some fearful expectations, that we think that God views us with a lens of judgment and anger. Or maybe for some of us, we have this expectation that God values justice, and so he's going to do something about those who abuse power and privilege. And whatever expectations we've carried with us, right, sometimes they're validated by our experiences, and other times, when they don't happen, they don't, you know, go out the way we intend them to happen, we end up experiencing disappointment and confusion. You know, it's been said that expectations are just resentments waiting to happen. And for John, right, his unfulfilled expectation of Jesus had the potential to create resentment for him. You know, maybe he's now realizing, what if I wasted my entire life and career preparing the way for someone who isn't who he was supposed to be. And on top of that, he's suffering in prison. But how can these moments be an opportunity that lead us to curiosity instead of resentment? How might we be curious about the source of our expectations? Right? Maybe we've projected our own value onto these expectations of God. You know, if we have a tendency to be a control freak, then, you know, it's likely that our expectation is that God is a micromanager, you know, looking over our shoulder. Or if we have a tendency to be extremely critical or demanding of others and ourselves, then maybe our expectation of God is that he's demanding and judgmental. If we grew up with a fundamental upbringing, then it's likely that we have an expectation that God is transactional, that when we're good to God, God's good to us. And when we're not, God's not. You know, one of the more difficult things that Rachel and I experienced leading up to the birth of our first son, Zachary, you know, everything was going pretty well with the pregnancy until about 6 weeks left. And our doctor told us that she was concerned because she wasn't seeing any increase in size or weight. And so she ran some tests, and then she had some more concerns. She thought maybe there might have been some chromosomal abnormalities. And so that, you know, shattered our expectation of a normal pregnancy and delivery. And they needed a quick decision on whether or not we should schedule an emergency delivery 6 weeks early. And so, you know, for me, in my mind, that was heavily influenced by a fundamentalist context. You know, I'm thinking, okay, what did I do wrong? Right? How did I contribute to this? How was I responsible for this happening? You know, maybe it was the time that I got really upset at Rachel when my competitive nature came out and I made her fill in on our softball team. And instead of catching the ball that was hit to her, she started running away from the ball. Maybe they do that in Canada. I don't know. But I was extremely upset with her. And so now I'm replaying all these moments where, you know, I wasn't loving enough or I wasn't doing things that I should have been doing. And so I'm replaying all this. And it's bringing up a lot of worry, a lot of fear, a lot of questions about, you know, expectations of God's, you know, place in this. You know, is God testing us? Right? Why is God choosing to put this decision on us? And so in this in-between space of waiting and wondering, you know, it allowed us to have that space to have curiosity around all the different expectations that we've held on to up to this point. And so for us in this season of Advent, you know, how might we practice curiosity around our expectations of God? How can we make space to ask questions like John did that will actually force us to re-examine some of our expectations? You know, maybe we can try this thought experiment right now. So in your mind, think of something that might be disappointing, or frustrating, or confusing for you right now. You know, maybe some resentment is starting to develop around this circumstance. And hold that in your mind. And then reflect on how this disappointment or resentment might be tied to an expectation that we have of God. You know, I thought God was going to do this. Or I thought God wouldn't allow this to happen. Or I thought God, fill in the blank. And then be curious about the source of that expectation. Right? What personal preferences or values have we projected onto that expectation? How might our family of origin or our faith upbringing have shaped that expectation? And as we continue to wonder and practice curiosity, we might come to a place where we realize we might need to let go of that expectation, or we might need to adjust that expectation. Or maybe we even need to stay in the tension of that unresolved expectation. And that's our invitation this Advent season. And then we continue in verse 4. Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them." And so what's interesting here is that Jesus doesn't respond with a theological explanation or argument as to why he is the Messiah. he simply invites them to observe. Like, what do you hear? What do you see? And I'm not sure that's the answer John wanted. And, you know, Jesus is telling them pretty much what they already know. And it's probably the reason John is having doubts in the first place. Right? Because they were expecting a strong leader who was going to use strength to overcome this powerful Roman Empire. But the people Jesus is spending all his time and energy with seem to be the opposite of that strength. The blind, the crippled, the poor. And so Jesus is trying to help John realize that these marginalized people have just as much worth and value in God's economy. That's why he came in the first place. And so for us in this season of Advent, maybe we're invited to observe the margins in our lives in order to expand our expectations of what God is doing. You know, I think we tend to avoid the margins because it'll remind us of how our expectations have not been met. Right? The seeming lack of God's actions in the margins of border separations or ethnic cleansing or homelessness. Right? That can generate frustration and resentment. And yet the invitation that Jesus offers is to go and look and be present in those places. The work Jesus came to do isn't going to be done in places of power and influence, but it's being done in the margins. That's why Jesus chooses to spend most of his life entering places that are marginalized, to be with people who are marginalized. And I think Advent serves as a reminder that if we rely on our limited and sometimes self-centered expectations of God, then we end up missing what's happening in those spaces. And what are the margins for us? You know, it could be the cultural margins where society has already put people, right? Those who can't find a job, those who struggle with mental illness, those who have different racial and religious backgrounds. And it can also be personal margins that we've created in our own lives, where we've put people who don't agree with our values and beliefs, or who we don't think offer us any benefit, or who have somehow wronged us. But we need to ask ourselves, are we seeing and hearing the people and experiences in those margins? You know, recently I had a chance to watch the new Mr. Rogers movie. Right, it's A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, where Tom Hanks plays Fred Rogers. Any of you seen it yet? And it shows the life and impact of Mr. Rogers from a different perspective and story. Right, so check out the trailer.
Hey, I'm looking for Fred Rogers.
In here.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Please, won't you be my neighbor? Hello, neighbor.
Mr. Rogers,
I'm here to interview you.
It is so nice to meet you.
You okay?
Profiling Mr. Rogers.
Lloyd, please don't ruin my childhood.
This piece will be for an issue about heroes. Do you consider yourself a hero?
We are trying to give the world positive ways of dealing with their feelings.
Yeah? Like what?
Many things you can do. You can play all the lowest keys on a piano at the same time.
You love broken people like me.
Sometimes we have to ask for help, and that's okay.
I think the best thing we can do is to let people know, boom, that each one of them is precious.
Hey, Mr. Rogers.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor.
Please, won't you be my neighbor?
That was wonderful.
He's so inspirational. And, you know, not only was he drawn to care for children, but he was drawn to care for those who were experiencing pain and those who were suffering. This is how he reflects on the value of each person. He said, as human beings, our job in life is to help people realize how rare and valuable each one of us really is. That each of us has something that no one else has or ever will. Something inside that is unique to all time. It's our job to encourage each other to discover that uniqueness and to provide ways of developing its expression. You know, he was keenly aware, he was always observant of those in the margins. And he understood that everyone has intrinsic worth that God has given them. Especially those in the margins and those who are broken. And then we are all given the invitation to observe and to find how God is already present in those people and places. And so for us in this Advent season, maybe we can ask ourselves a couple questions. One, who are the people in our margins? Right? Who have we missed seeing and hearing? Or who have we put in those margins to avoid them? And then second, how can we observe what God is already doing in those people and places? Right? How can we be open to hearing and seeing what God is doing in them? And so Jesus answered them, "Go and tell John what you hear and see. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the poor have good news brought to them." And then we close in verse 6, "And blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me." And so Jesus here is making a callback to the Beatitudes, where he taught this counterintuitive message of who is really blessed, right? It's the poor. It's the meek, it's the merciful, the peacemakers, the persecuted. Those are the ones who are blessed. Right? Everyone that society rejects and marginalizes, those are the very ones that Jesus values and is present with. And then what's the significance of taking no offense at Jesus? He says, "Blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me." And I think it implies, right, that his teaching and his life was constantly at odds with status quo, with the expectations that were put on him. And the real blessing happens when someone can actually let go of those expectations that caused them to be offended by his teachings and his life. And so though, even though it might seem counterintuitive, in this season of Advent, where we celebrate a birth, we're simultaneously invited to allow for the death of certain expectations that we hold on to. And I think what Jesus is trying to say here is that there's something greater than the disappointment and resentment that we experience when our expectations aren't met. And instead, we're invited to actually let those expectations die, so that we are able to learn how to live in a new way. That's the blessing. You know, for me, growing up in a fundamentalist context, right, with this, you know, expectation that God is transactional, when I finally was able to let that expectation die, I was finally given the freedom to acknowledge and understand that I can't earn God's love. Right? There's nothing that I can do or not do that will make God love me more or less. And it's when I let go of that expectation that it also reshaped how I loved others and began to move away from a transactional love in my own relationships. And I think that's what Advent is inviting us into. That as we anticipate this unexpected birth that failed to meet many people's expectations, it's also this birth that invites us to reform, to reshape, to reimagine our expectations of God in a new way. So let me close with this poem by John O'Donohue that captures this hope for a new beginning in this season of Advent. In out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you are ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with a seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered, heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would you always live like this? Then the delight, when your courage kindled and out you stepped onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plentitude opening before you. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself into the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's desire. Awaken your spirit to adventure, hold nothing back, learn to find ease in risk. Soon you will be home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that awaits you. And we ask all this in the love of the Father, the peace of the Son, and the curiosity of the Holy Spirit. Amen.